This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
Good morning. It is very good to be here this morning. It's always exciting to come back here to get energized, hear new ideas, and things to be encouraged as we go on. The idea of being servants, and we all know we are called to be servants in many different ways, and I want to look at a few different ways this week that we will live out and how that comes out in the way we teach and do our classes. For consideration, let's think of this question: why do I teach? Why do you teach? What made you say yes when they called you and said, "Will you please teach?" From the blog on the docforlearning.org, which you all should be following very, very closely, it is a powerful tool for teachers, the docforlearning.org. On the blog there, John Mark Kuhn said that one of the reasons he gave for teaching is because I can make a difference. You know, and that's really what it is. We're looking to influence lives. We want to improve the lives of these children. We want to better the future of the church by giving training and skills to the future leaders that there are. We're developing kingdom servants. We're hoping to develop God's businessmen rather than just good businessmen. We believe we are called of God. And Christopher Dock went so far as to ask God to forgive him for the years of neglect when he was not teaching and fulfilling the calling that God had for him. You know, every teacher, whether they sit down and think about it, realize it or not, they have this thing we could call a teacher fantasy. That as a teacher, I am changing lives. I am influencing the future. I am touching these children. I'm leaving my mark on them so that in 40 years, I will be loved and remembered and respected as this wonderful influence on the church and the school and lives. That's kind of what we, when we say, why do you teach? We think about those things. So with that in mind, thinking of teaching in Christian schools from a Christian viewpoint, very closely related to what John shared this morning, that teaching is more about who you are than what you do. This morning, John said that what we love defines who we are and what we do. So again, who you are. So let's look at it. Who you are, or who you should be. Because this is what is vital to become if we plan on achieving that goal of influencing and making a change. In the book of Luke, there is a verse I want to look at in Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6, verse 40. The disciple is not above his master, but everyone that is perfect shall be as his master. Or we could say the student will become as the teacher when he has completed his course of learning. Keeping that in mind of the student becoming like the teacher, and let's go to the book of Acts, chapter 4. Book of Acts, chapter 4, verse 13. We have Peter and John brought before the rulers of the temple. And it says, this about them. Now, when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they marveled, and they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. Notice what happened there? They spent time with him, and they became like him. And then when we get to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, Paul then says, follow me as I follow Christ. So we are here attempting to become like Christ. In the book, The Handbook for Creative Teaching, another powerful resource for you, if you don't want to read all 900 pages, use the index in the back and find the part that applies to your particular problem or need for the day. It probably addresses it. In that book, in the beginning, he said that for the many beads of knowledge that we give to them, we also need to supply the string, the philosophy of life, so they can put it all together. Your life as a teacher, you are the string given to your students to provide proof that these ideas, these beads of knowledge you've given them, work. Your students want to know that it is possible to live a joyful, victorious Christian life. You are the string that provides that. Another string you can help provide. Pete Peters, in a 2013 CLP workshop, put it this way. Teachers are a key part of seeing that the Anabaptist worldview is promoted and cultivated, not just received or passed on, but grown and strengthened. We're going to impress on these people that basic ideas about school, about teachers, and so on. Think about from a bad school experience. Why is it that people love to share stories of the things they got away with in school, the lousy teachers they had, and the inability of their teacher to explain some subject? Why are those the things that we hear about all the time? And you don't have to be a teacher very long before people say, oh, here is a teacher. Let's tell him these stories. And so we hear all these stories of whatever they are. And now when I come and I teach their children in school, these stories that their parents have told them are embedded in their heads, and I have to work against all of these ideas that they come to school thinking this is what school is and this is how teachers are. So as teachers, we are influencing also negatively if we are not careful. Looking at some characteristics of what a teacher should be, I wanted to look in the book of 2 Timothy. And in 2 Timothy chapter 2, he begins with these two verses. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. And he goes on and he lists characteristics that are vital for leaders in the church. And I want to pull out some of these today for us to think about these characteristics that are important for us to have. I'm not going to give you a complete list of characteristics that you need to have, but give us some to think about that we can get out of this chapter. With this being a thought point here for us, go to verse 14 of that chapter. Of these things put them in remembrance, charging them before the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit, but to the subverting of the hearers. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. But shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness. So he says, here's some things to avoid. The confusion, the babblings, the vain, the strife, We're going to avoid that. And he says, here's our focus. And we often look at this as encouraging people to study books and so on. But I want you to think about it this way. We're talking about being a workman. So let's say, instead of study, let's say, be careful. Pay attention to the way that you work and the way that you act so that you are correctly portraying Christ, that you are correctly portraying this God that you serve. What is your identity? Are you spending time with your master, with your teacher, so that you are becoming like him? In verse 22 of this chapter, it tells us that we need to follow after love. Charity, it says there. Follow after this here. We heard a lot about love this morning. We think of the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13 follows right after a long list of these are the gifts that are vital for the church to survive. The church needs all of these skills. They make up the whole body. And he lists that whole long list that God has given all of these things for perfection. And then he says, but wait a minute. If we don't have love, what is the purpose of any of these? And in chapter 13, he debunks all of those gifts and says they are all worthless if we have not started with love. Alexander Strauch, his last name Strauch, had written a book entitled Leading with Love. I have not read the book. I did watch a message that he preached on with the same title. It's on YouTube. Very challenging, the idea of if we are lacking in love, we are in the ability to communicate any of these other truths or to lead. It is part of the greatest commandment, both of the greatest commandments, and comes as a direct result of spending time with our master. That's where it's going to come from. Verse 24 reminds us that we must be gentle. Gentleness. Jesus was described in such a way that it says, a bruised reed would he not break? A smoking flax would he not quench? Think of the students in your classroom, that shy student that is scared to speak to you or interact in class discussion. The children that are weighted with learning, it is difficult for them to understand this concept. Those are the bruised reeds, the smoking flaxes that we relate with. But our gentleness is very important to build trust with these children. They are impressionable. They are not confident in themselves as we can be as adults. And we must have gentleness if we are going to gain their trust. How do we exemplify gentleness? Many ways. What words are you going to choose? Words have connotation. Are we using a word that brings gentleness? What do you laugh at? What do you not laugh at in your classroom? Children are embarrassed and shamed easily. It's good to laugh together as a class. But be careful that your laughter is gentle in regards to your students. Body language comes into this. The way we appear before them. Are we friendly? Are we welcoming in the things that we do as we welcome them to class? As we play with them at recess, are we gentle with them in the way that we play that? Or are we just the biggest person out there on the field and it is just too easy to run them over and be the favorite person to have on my team because we'll always win because the teacher's the biggest person? Is that gentleness with our students? Our tone of voice. Because we're dealing with children who are easily embarrassed, we need to have gentleness there. Empathy comes into here as part of gentleness. Remember being an adolescent yourself? The fear of everyone around you? how you appear, saying things that were not what you intended to say, an answer that was obviously foolish after you said it? Are you clear in providing support and encouragement for your students when they encounter those situations? When dealing with error, they did something wrong, do we correct or do we punish? Do we correct or do we punish? See, there's our word connotation. We may be doing the same thing either way, but what is the idea behind it? Am I doing this to punish you for doing what you should not do, or because I'm trying to give you direction in the right way to go? Which one of them is more gentle? When you approach parents with a problem that their child has, are we looking out for that child's best, or merely to remove a frustration in our classroom? And are we then trying to fix the family because they have this problem? Does that not bring to mind the beam and the moat in "I have the wisdom to fix this family"? Or are we looking to what is for the best of that child? You're forming impressions with these children. You are making a string that these children will take with them. You are teaching them about your master. Verse 24 also calls us to be patient. When you have to tell Jane for the 10th time to turn around, when Johnny continues to pick his nose and wipe it on his desk, when Jill forgot her school books again for the 3rd, 4th, 5th time this week, it just goes on. When Jim, he wasn't paying attention in class when we were trying to discuss this new concept, and now he has no clue how to deal with the questions that he has in front of him. Patience. You know, the interesting thing about patience is only needed in undesirable situations with unpleasant people. You know, we can. It's easy to be patient with our friends because we usually don't consider them to be unpleasant people. But that's where the patience comes in. It's only when we run into these hard situations that the patience is necessary for us. And when the patience goes, guess what? The gentleness goes right behind it. It just moves right on out with it. It's hard to maintain our patience. It's hard to maintain our gentleness when we lose our patience there. We need patience when we are working with troubled children, undisciplined children, unsupportive parents, dysfunctional families, children that are slow to learn. But let's remember, that's why we are teaching. Because we said, I want to make a difference. I want to have an impact. I want to change someone's life. What's the point in changing and influencing someone when they don't need that? So these are really the people why we're here. Let's think back to Luke 6, verse 40, as a solution for our patience. Everyone, when he is perfect, when he is completed, he will be like his teacher. Are you spending time with your teacher? Are you spending time with Christ so that you are becoming more like him, so that you can guide these children to be like him as well? Are we bringing love to the situation? Love does what? It suffereth long. And that is a a source of our patience is that love we need to have for them. Another way to deal with lack of patience, try to reach an understanding of what is happening. What are the difficulties this child is facing? What is it making? Why is this child acting this way? Why is this child acting out this way, unable to get their work done? I can't change the family, but what is going on in that family day to day? Why Jill can't remember to bring her books to school? Why did Johnny never learn any social skills? What was lacking in his home that was not important there? Try to understand. Understanding can help us gain patience as well. Peaceable. Now, it tells us in verse 22 that we need to follow after righteousness, faith, charity, peace. We need to follow peace. But I want you to notice all the other times when peace or peaceableness gets mentioned in this chapter. Some of the other places it's been mentioned, well, we read a couple of them. In verse 14, it says that this servant of the Lord does not strive. There's one. Verse 16, we have it again. Shun profane and vain babblings that increase unto ungodliness. How about verse 23? These questions that gender strife. How about verse 24? The servant of the Lord does not strive. These are all words that are talking about how peaceably we relate to other people. Being argumentative, being contentious. I want you to think about something in relating to your students, and you can take this relating to other people too, but in relating to your students, it's a rule. It goes like this. When you argue, you lose. Okay, right there. That's the way it works. When you argue, you lose. And especially when you argue with your students. You lose. It puts you down on the same level as they are and absolutely destroys your authority. It just doesn't exist anymore if we're just trying to argue. It just makes you the biggest kid in the room, the easiest to be the bully. That's what happens when you argue. And by the way, that's why students love to argue with you. Because it destroys your authority. And it makes you unable to say, this is what we're going to do here now. And, well, but I wanted to do this and I wanted to do that. And if we enter into that argument, then we're saying, I have to just give a better explanation. Or I have to give all this stuff here to prove that I'm right in this situation. You argue, you lose. A discussion is good. Explanation is vital to understanding these topics and concepts we have. But we have to separate a discussion, an explanation, from an argument. An argument usually involves emotion. And maybe just the showing of that emotion is only evident in our students when they're in class. But it does involve emotion. You get in an argument and you're more worried about proving that you are right and that your way is the way you should do it than anything else. That's what it is. A discussion is when we talk about this topic and we can understand the beauty of stars and we talk about their colors and their temperatures and so on. And we can have a discussion on that. But when it comes to an argument, I don't need to listen to you anymore. I just need you to listen to me. Then it's an argument. When I don't care what you have to say. If you would just shut up and listen to me, I'd be able to tell you how you're wrong. That's an argument. And that is what we cannot do with our students. And it's a teacher's responsibility to do that. Students are always ready to have an argument. You know, maybe it's not too muddy to play softball. Yeah, we can go and run and jump around that big lake over there by second base, and we can still play softball, you know. Or maybe it's just way too hot to play softball. We would rather play duck, duck, goose or something. They're going to bring up something that they're going to want to argue about, and we have to stay back from that and say, this is the decision I have made. I decided we're doing this. No, we don't need to argue. This is just what we're going to do. Or maybe it's something like this. How do the scientists know that those stars we were talking about are this temperature, they're this far away, you know, they're made of these gases? How do they know that? They can't, they've never been there. How do they know that? One of the things I have told them in these situations is just because you don't understand all of the scientific evidence that goes into that does not mean that it's not true, right? It is okay to accept this and know that this can be right, and I don't have to be able to understand all the parts of that. Or we can... Teachers need to avoid contention with other school personnel. How about meetings with other teachers? What about relations with parents? What about interacting with your school board or your principal? What about the school's expectations for you? Your school has certain things that they want you to do. They have a certain way that they want you to act, to dress, to conduct your classes. And what about contention that you have about abiding by those expectations? Are you contentious? I would refer you to Galatians chapter 5, verse 15. But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. Are you contentious? Do you have problems falling in line with what you have been asked to do? Well, let me ask you this. You want to destroy your school? That's the quickest way to do that. You start to bite and devour the teachers you work with, the authority you have, the students you have in your room, and it will destroy and break down the morale in your whole school. It's one of those powerful tools of the devil. You go around and you talk to people who are involved in mission work, and what is one of their biggest struggles? Getting along with the missionaries. That is the difficult part. And what is that? That's the biting and devouring right here. And if we as a school staff come together and we cannot get along and we cannot fall in line with what we have agreed that we will do, we are not giving an example of who our master is and who our teacher is. Verse 25 also calls us to be meek, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves. If God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. Meekness. I think this is my favorite one on this list. This is that one characteristic that probably makes a leader most appealing or admirable to someone who comes to speak to them. It makes them approachable. It makes power approachable when it involves meekness. The this word has changed its meaning in its use in recent years. It often gets associated with weakness, subservience, lacking in the desire, the ability, or the courage to share my opinion or desire. But that is not what meekness is. Jesus described himself as being meek. We take Jesus in Gethsemane, where he had the ability, the choice, and the power to avoid the cross. And he put the desires of his Father before his own. He put your well-being and my well-being before his own well-being and submitted to that, putting the good of others before himself. So meekness is not the lack of strength or power or ability, but it is to moderate that and to control that and to use it in such a way that it is in service to others and is not a detriment to others. Just because I can doesn't mean I should. Meekness is being able to take a sports car and drive it at the speed limit. There is all sorts of power and ability to drive at high rates of speed, but I'm going to, in meekness, control this so that it is to the good of everyone around me as well. It is actively, purposefully limiting my rights and my privileges in favor of others. It is putting others before me in every aspect of life. It's being a servant. A newspaper article I found by a woman named Glenna Christensen has a really long title. She entitled it, "True Meekness Requires Self-Mastery and Strength and Does Not Equate to Weakness." This is what she said in the article. "Someone who is meek controls his response to life situations as well as to those who offend or challenge him. Such a person can celebrate the success of others without resentment, listen to their adventures without need to impress them with his own experiences, respond to criticism, deserved or not, with equanimity, refrain from retaliating or using greater skill or knowledge to belittle another in any circumstance, and not entertain feelings of self-importance and superiority to any fellow being." There's a lot of good examples in there for us. I can celebrate the success of another without resentment that it did not include me. I can listen to the adventures of another without needing to one-up the story. I can just enjoy it. I had a better adventure, okay? It's like established fact. I had a better adventure. I had a better time. I had more fun. But when someone comes to me and they're excited about what they did, I don't have to one-up that story. I can, in meekness, enjoy their story, be excited about their adventure. Respond to criticism, deserved or not, with equanimity, with calmness, listening to that person, giving them time. Refrain from retaliating or using greater skill or knowledge to belittle another. See, when we teach, we develop the ability to speak and to speak well, and we work on honing our ability to communicate and to choose our words quickly, and to sometimes we have to make up and speak quickly when we didn't plan to speak. And so we develop this ability to do this. And as we study, we develop and we gain knowledge. And so we have this at our disposal. And someone comes up against us and says something about us is derogatory, or they say something that's wrong, or they say something poorly. And we have the ability to absolutely destroy that person with our ability, with our knowledge. But that doesn't make it right. Okay? It's the ability to not do that. And then when we're all done with this, we look at what ability I had. When I look at what my skill level was in relation to these people that brought these accusations to me, that told me of their adventures, that tried to bring accusations against me, that I can respond meekly and still not entertain feelings of self-importance and superiority. So this is our teacher's attitude of meekness and these other ideas. Because we are going to have power and influence on children, we are expected to have knowledge about these many topics, have the ability to speak, be creative. We're good with children. Meekness keeps our perspective where it needs to be. That we are here not to be a great respected person, but we are here to try to serve these children. That these children are really the focus of why I'm here. Now, I do not give you these things as this is a list of things that once we get these, then we've got this list figured out. I do not even give this list of things here as just saying, I want you to go and try to grasp all these things and strive to meet these things. That's not what we're getting at here. Because remember what it said. It didn't say that a servant is like his master when he has caught these things. No, it said a servant is like his master when he has become like his master. So these are just a few of the ways that we can go and be Christ to our students. Go and be like Christ. Spend time with him so you can be like him. That's what they said about the disciples. They said, these men have been with Jesus. So what is our biggest obstacle to accomplishing that? It becomes ourselves. You are your biggest obstacle to being like Christ. And until we come before God and we die to ourselves, we are unable to do this. This is asking Christ to live through me. It's not about me standing in front of a classroom and teaching them on the important things they need to know, but it's me being a vessel that I can represent Christ to them. In the book of Luke, chapter 9, verse 23, and he said unto them all, if a man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for my sake, the same, so shall save it. The book of Philippians, chapter 1, verse 21. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And again, back to the book of Galatians, chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. In the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.